This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Friday. Good to be with you. Matt and Patrick here today. Brett will stop on by a little bit later on. I've got an interview with him. How are you today, Patrick? Everything going okay? It got humid today. Did you notice that?
It got really humid. It was nice when I opened the windows in my bedroom this morning, and then I went outside. I got some pizza today, and I'm like, ugh.
Was it like extra cheese? Because that doesn't work. Humidity and extra cheese pizza does not work.
It does not.
Are you going? I know you're a fan of the beautiful town of Grand Marais, a jewel up on the North Shore. Are you going up there for at all for the art festival they got this weekend?
I will not be there this weekend, unfortunately. I will be here.
Well, lots of things to do in the town here, and of course, I was just up in Virginia, Minnesota, which is up on the Iron Range. Very sad story today. They got a major fire in their downtown right now. It looked like, and this is from bringmethenews.com. It looked like at least three or four businesses are on fire. And if you know Virginia, it's on Chestnut Street, right in downtown. It's the main street down there. And it's Pep's. It's Pep's Bakery. My dad always loved Pep's. They nice little bakery they have downtown. And one of the last ones they have there is most of the businesses. But Virginia's just... I'm going to write a blog piece on Virginia, Minnesota, because they have a lot of problems going on there. But it's not the traditional problems that you have. They've got something else going on there, and I don't want to get into that now, but necessarily they've had a tough time up there, and the downtown is, it's had its rough spots, and this is not helping, especially when you're looking at some of the few businesses. That 300 block is one of the few blocks that actually has a lot of businesses on it, and right now looking like four of them are on fire, and so and needless to say, a lot of them are going to have fire damage as, definitely some trouble up there. So all my best up there. I mean, I've got a lot of connection to the area there. So whenever I see something up there, I kind of get a little bit get frustrated, and obviously it piques my interest there. And especially once again, it's that those towns up there, they are much more vulnerable to the economic impacts and the economic waves that go along with, you know, something of that nature. And so and it's like I said, I mean, it's one of those places that my dad used to take me up there. We go down to, hey, let's go to Pep's, we'll go get some donuts. You think I'm going to shy away from a donut from Pep's? We'll have to see where it starts. Obviously there'll be a full investigation there, but once again, that's up in Virginia, Minnesota. Breaking news on that. Dynamo is calling from Minneapolis, wanted to chime in. We mentioned the Grand Marais Art Fair this weekend. He wanted to mention, Dynamo wanted to mention the Uptown Art Fair. Hi, Dynamo.
Hi, how's it going, Matt?
It's going okay.
Say, I was wondering, first of all, you've heard the news that the Uptown... I think it was Tuesday it was announced. Yeah. And, of course, you know, that impacts... As you well know, that impacts about 300 artists, about 300, it affects all the people that have food vending there, affects mm-hmm. all the people that have food trucks there, affects all the people who are doing Airbnb, people that are taking Lyft and Uber. You know, it just cascades down the line. Now, I did write a letter to the editor today for the Star Tribune.
Dynamo, I unfortunately, thank you, Dynamo. Your phone's cutting out quite a bit here, and he's chiming in about the Uptown Art Fair and that they canceled it. It was interesting. They kind of changed up a little bit. I mean, there definitely seemed to be a change narrative, and I'll get the exact verbiage after the next break. I want to make sure I read that correctly in regards to the Uptown Art Fair. I'll come back to that. But there was an interesting element which they kind of changed up some of the verbiage in regards to their justification, and basically said, oh, it's because of these problems that they're having in Uptown. Well, First of all, if you think that anyone is going to somehow drag race, I'm sorry. The Uptown Art Fair has got concrete blocks blocking off every single street there. That, and they always have. It's not like that. So I mean, you know, no knucklehead's going to come flying down the road and go right through the Uptown Art Fair. I think one of the problems, and I'll get to this also a little bit later on, maybe in the 5 o'clock hour in regards to Uptown, because I got that other story that they broke down there about the individual doing the donuts down there. And I think it has to be, we have to a point, talk a little bit about the fact that there seems to be a, you know, the police are non-existent in a lot of this town. The police are non-existent in a lot of this town. I think by design, they're not patrolling like they used to. They don't care. They feel as if they didn't appreciate us killing George Floyd. And they put one of our guys in jail. Poor us. Shut up. I'm sorry. I have no pity for you guys. You know, where were you guys when Chauvin did that? Where were you guys out there saying, no, that's not us? For God's sakes, the EMTs now are saying, no. We need to change our uniforms because we look way too much like cops in these uniforms. We don't want to look like them. That's how bad your brand is damaged. And if you want to bring this back, I mean, there's two paths that we're going down here. Path one is, oh, wow, we have a problem here, probably caused mostly by the police union and this feeling like we're untouchable, and utilizing the Republican Party of Minnesota to basically turn the police into a vigilante squad almost to a point. I mean, not necessarily the correct term, but, you know, really kind of they do what they want to do. There's no accountability. There doesn't seem to be a lot of accountability anymore for this group, is there? They're the police, but they seem to have almost zero accountability. We've talked about the Minnesota Reformer story where police officers get caught doing things and, you know, they basically, because they've watered down the disciplinary process so much, there's no discipline for them. We've talked about the fact there was the Care 11 story that just came on out. They're not even listing race anymore because I think what they're trying to do is avoid being criticized for how they treat minority people. And so they basically just don't list race anymore when they arrest anyone, even though when it's clear someone is of a certain race. Trying to escape that. And basically, you know, my guess would be cameras are off. We've got, of course, the shooting in Uptown. You have a lot of problems that are going on right now. And on top of it, if I can mention the thing I've only been mentioning for about 10 years, we've got a police department because of the Republican Party of Minnesota. They've created a situation where a police officer can be off duty, drunk as a skunk, in a bar, say, hey, I got to go home because my God, I got to shoot you. And leave drunk, drive home drunk, go get their gun drunk, come back to the bar drunk. And all they have to do when they shoot you is say, I was scared. I was scared. I was so scared. I was scared. Oh, I was scared. And they'll get away with it. Because the Republican Party of Minnesota basically wrote the laws that basically say, as long as an officer says he was scared, he can murder anyone he wants to. So, you know, you had two paths you could go. You could continue down this path where you're putting knees in the back of guys' necks on the middle of Chicago Avenue at 38th and choking them out after 9.5 minutes. You could do that and demand, you know, kind of apologies from the city of how dare you question our policing. That sort of thing. And this kind of thing, you know, it's this as and how many other incidences have we had of the police driving cars through protests and stuff like that with lights on, like they're gang colors, for God's sakes. You could go down that road, or you could come on out and say, wow, we have a lot of work to do. Let's get out there. Let's help the community. And right now, I think the only, because of the way things gone in the last year, the lack of leadership from City Hall, the lack of leadership from the Minneapolis City Council, the clear determination by the police department to never change their policies and the way they work, and the way things are going, I think the only way you're going to do this is a complete turnover of staff at this point. And I'm dead serious. I think the only way you're going to be able to fix this whole thing is a complete turnover of staff. But the question is who gets hired? Remember, Minnesota Republican Party basically three times this last year, refused to outlaw racist cops, namely Nazi cops and KKK cops. That when brought forward three times to say white supremacist people who are members of white supremacy groups could not be police officers in Minnesota. The Republicans and the two traitors that used to be with the DFL voted in unison, say, nope, Nazi cops are okay with them. KKK cops are okay with them. So here we are. Needless to say, I would make an argument, the bigger fear that you have if you're the Uptown Art Fair is probably, will the police even be there? And that's a legitimate question. If something bad did happen, would there be police officers there? Or do you have to, you know, would you have to hire private security for it? You know, it. I've lived in this city a long time. And I have been in the Uptown Art Fair. There have always been interesting characters down there. How would I say it like that? There's always been protesting. There's always been people out there screaming. There's always been people making a scene. The reality is that it's Uptown. It's not a Dyna. So there is supposed to be some character. I thought them pulling the plug on that was a little bit premature, but it's their their thing to run. But the reality is I think we have a larger question here in regards to what exactly is going on in regards to the where the police are at. Because 2 years ago, if someone tried to do donuts at the intersection of Lake and Hennepin, there'd be five squad cars there in 3 minutes. That person would be arrested and that person would be gone. Now they're doing donuts for 20 minutes, firing 30 rounds in the air, and yeah, we'll get there eventually, I guess. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I will get the clarification on that verbiage from the Uptown Art Fair because there was an interesting omission from when the press releases that made it into the paper. I'll get to that in a sec. But I do want to get into a little bit of coronavirus as well this first half hour. And I want to make sure I point out something which I think is an important element of the what's going on in this country, and the fact that if you were looking at Missouri and Arkansas right now, those two states are screwed because they have had Republicans there tell people don't get vaccinated, and if they don't want to get vaccinated, then they basically that's okay with them. And I want to make sure we understand there is a new thing that's being said here by Republicans, and I'm going to paraphrase it here. Sure, I told you shouldn't get vaccinated and the vaccines will kill you and that there are microchips in there and they're going to magnetize you and they don't work and COVID is a myth. But what I was really saying is it's an individual choice whether you get vaccinated. That's on you. And they want to kind of omit the fact that for a year now they have downplayed and they said, yeah, we don't want you to get vaccinated. We don't want you to do this. There must now be a concern that this is going to come back and bite them, because Republicans, especially in these states that are starting to get hit harder with the Delta variant, they are now all of a sudden coming on out and making comments to the effect of, well, it's, you know, sure, I said that, you know, Dr. Fauci is trying to kill your grandma, but what I was really saying is you should make an informed choice. And, you know, yeah, good luck walking that one back. Good luck with that. I'll get more on coronavirus. Like I said, I'll revisit the Uptown Art Fair thing in a second, but let's get Gary in here really quick. Gary's in Minneapolis. Hey, Gary.
Yeah, hi, Matt. Good to hear your voice again.
Thank you.
So, you know, the Republicans have been making war on the unions. Remember, it really went all out when Rodney Ranney went after the air traffic controllers, open season on closed shops, and they went to build the middle class. But even the building trades, they're doing pretty good, I guess, but they have to compete with undocumented workers that they're hiring to knock the wages down. But the cops, you know, everything's just hunky-dory, you know, and if they're such a good union, they're Trump supporters in my town, and I have to bail them out when they do that crap like killing Floyd. And anyways, if they're so hunky-dory, the rest of the cops, how come they vote in, Kroll?
Because Kroll was unapologetic. Gary is fired up. Gary, take a breath, my friend. You are angry. I'm angry too. Why don't you be careful, okay, Gary Bear? Let's take a break. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll come on back more on coronavirus when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Can I get some nasty bass? AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. No, I'm trying to. There was an interesting. I think it might have been Chad Davis on Twitter. I thought he was, and I could be wrong. There were some people that noticed that the initial press release, the Uptown. Okay, yeah. Okay, here it is. The Uptown Association announced the cancellation of the 2021 Uptown Art Fair because of multiple evolving issues, including security, road closures, and other logistical challenges. Our window to move forward is closed. They said it'll return August 5th to 7th. Worth noting that including security road closures was part of the Uptown Association's initial statement, but was removed from that statement and was posted on their social media post in there. So it was security and road closures, logistical challenges. So they basically, it was kind of, it sounds like, I don't know, like I said, the Uptown Art Fair, whenever I've gone down there, it's concrete barriers across, you know, Lake and Hennepin. You can't get in there. You have to walk in. And, you know, if it's a case where you just didn't, you know, you couldn't either depend on Minneapolis police to do the security, which I think has become a legitimate concern. Can we count on the Minneapolis Police Department to keep the people of Minneapolis safe? It's a legitimate question. I mean, I think it's a question worth asking. And did that play a factor in the Uptown Art Fair getting canceled? It's a legitimate question. It's a legit question. Or was it a case where it was just going to cost you that much more money to do it? I don't know. Needless to say, hey, maybe the U.S. Marshal shouldn't have shot Mr. Smith down in the parking ramp there. Maybe that task force should have had cameras on. Maybe there should have been, yeah, maybe that could have gone 1,000 different ways better. So 952-946-6205. Friday's COVID. Let's get into the COVID numbers first of all for today. COVID update for Minnesota for today. June 7th, the state reported that 3,082,040 people have received at least one dose, while 2,927,197 people have completed their vaccine series. The percentage of men in population with at least one shot based on age group, 12 to 15 is up to 38%, 16 to 17, 50%, 18 to 49, 58. Nicely done. 72%, 50 to 64, 91%, 65 plus. Nicely done. 55% of the total population. 52.6% of Minnesota's total population is completed with the vaccination series. The Minnesota Department of Health has public dashboard to track vaccine progress in Minnesota. Hospitalizations through July 8th, the number of people with COVID hospitalized was 108. Of those hospitalized, 24 were in intensive care, 84 were receiving non-ICU treatment. All my best to all of you. I hope you do heal up and get better soon. Hospital admissions involving COVID patients in Minnesota dropped to 223 on March 7th before rising to near 700 on April 14th. Since that mid-April peak, the numbers have dropped and down dramatically. The 140 positive results in Friday's update were from 14,044 completed tests, creating a positivity rate of only 0.99, well below that threshold. Was it the 5% threshold is what they've been talking about, which I think is an important element of it. So there you go. It's still bad. And once again, we're only as good as a state as the weakest link. I'm looking at you, Republican districts, namely in the Brainerd Lakes area, namely Paul Gazelka's district, which I believe is still the worst county in the state for vaccinations. That Delta virus is getting in there. And if you read anything about this Delta virus, it's harsher, it transmits faster, and it's incredibly lethal for anyone that's not been vaccinated. And you just got you're serving up the buffet in those counties. I hope it doesn't get up there. I really don't. I want to get into as well a story Care 11 put out here announcing the end of this COVID emergency powers last week. Governor Walz proclaimed victory over the virus that prompted widespread restrictions across the state. The long dark winter has ended. But for months then, President Trump tweeted, "Liberty me here." Republicans have argued that Minnesota's restrictions were too tough. We have businesses arbitrarily closed. Now, mind you, I just want to say that these are people who claim to be Christian, who, if you're Christian, the saving of human lives over some businesses. And once again, all businesses suffered during this. I'm not saying it was easy. There were no good solutions. But at the end of the day, if you're a Christian, the saving of human lives should be your priority. I don't know if you've cracked open that book, but yeah, you might want to. All right. You know, Gospel of Matthew, great place to start. Try that. Okay. We've had businesses arbitrarily closed, said House Minority Leader Kurt Dowd during a legislative debate. So did Minnesota's restrictions help or hurt the state? Rather than ask politicians, Kara Levin investigated, asked independent experts what the data the past year actually shows. For months, Minnesota-based nonprofit Wilder Foundation has tracked the impact of COVID as part of the Minnesota Compass Project. Kara Levin spoke with Wilder research scientist Caitlin Hamrock, part of the team working on the project. As you look at the data, you have been able to tell, did Minnesota's restrictions save lives? Kara Levin asked. We did quite a bit better than our neighboring states in keeping the number of deaths and the number of cases down, said Hamrock. She points to the COVID tracking data from the Centers for Disease Control. Since the beginning of the pandemic through the end of June 2021, the CDC data shows Minnesota had the lowest death rate of any surrounding state. The CDC tracks the number COVID cases and deaths per state, equalized by population. The data measures the number of COVID deaths per 100,000 people. According to the data available on July 1st, the difference in the COVID death numbers in the upper Midwest is striking. Minnesota has the lowest death rate since the start of the pandemic, 136 deaths per 100,000 people. Wisconsin, where COVID restrictions were imposed in population centers like Milwaukee and Madison, but were blocked statewide by Republican lawmakers, wasn't far behind, but they were behind at 139 deaths. In Iowa and North Dakota, where Republican governors opposed most restrictions, the CDC data shows the death rate was significantly higher than in Minnesota. Iowa was 194. Death rate in North Dakota was 200. South Dakota, during the pandemic, South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem aired television commercials touting her state's lack of COVID restrictions. We trust our people. Well, you shouldn't. I got news for you, Kristi. They seem pretty stupid over there. You shouldn't have done that in South Dakota. I'm saying. We trust our people. We respect their rights. We won't shut them down. That's what I'm kind of paraphrasing. I'm adding theatrical emphasis. At the Conference of Conservative Supporters, Noem boasted about how South Dakota resisted COVID-related restrictions. My administration didn't And who can argue with that? Without significant restrictions, the data shows South Dakota citizens were more likely to die. According to the CDC, July 1st, this COVID death rate since the beginning of the pandemic was 230 deaths per 100,000 population, nearly double Minnesota's death rate. You absolute idiots. And once again, this is Kristi Noem who will, I'm such a Christian woman. But she put Arby's being open so people could get a beef and cheddar over human lives. That was more important because I think that's in the, is that Gospel of Luke? You know, a beef and cheddar with some potato wedges? Oh, delicious. No, actually, it's not in there. It's actually care for the human lives. You fake Christian. Kristi Noem, you're a fake Christian. Anyway, but you claim to be Christian, but you put an Arby's beef and cheddar being available to some rube as more important than saving lives. And reminder, it's South Dakota where it had that heart-wrenching story where nurses were trying to tell people who were dying, you're dying of coronavirus. And the people were ripping off their masks, coughing and screaming or wheezing at them. But coronavirus is a myth. And they died. Nearly twice as many people died in South Dakota than in Minnesota. So, yes, Governor Walz, he did a good job in Minnesota trying to keep us safe. As far as long-term jobs, I mean, there was, you know, once again, it's interesting because at one point, expert says the evidence was quite clear. You can talk about that report card. I think you have to give it an incomplete, said Jordan Hensley, an analyst from the University of New Hampshire's Carsey School of Public Policy. The school tracked state-by-state economic impact of COVID. Their most recent report was last week. Overall, Hensley says the data shows Minnesota doing better than most of the nation. When you compare the broadest measure of the economic activity, the gross domestic product in the last quarter of 2019 before the pandemic, with the first quarter of 2021 as the nation began to reopen, Hensley said the nation's economy dropped 0.9%. Minnesota just dropped, though, 0.5%. Minnesota's economy right now is doing a little bit better than the national economy, which is, you know, I'm okay with that. But compared to our neighbors, Minnesota did not fare as well. Compared to some surrounding states, Minnesota has lost more jobs. The data shows Minnesota and every other surrounding state lost jobs during the pandemic, but Minnesota showed the biggest drop of 5.6. However, experts say Minnesota's higher job losses could be a result of overall makeup of the economy. Certain places like South Dakota, Iowa, don't have the same kind of urban centers. We have a much larger share of job in recreation and service industry than the neighboring states. The good news, as Minnesota reopens, the early data indicates the state is recovering much faster than most other states. Experts say that since Minnesota has a higher vaccination rate than neighboring states, the economic rebound is likely to continue and less likely to be slowed by new outbreaks. They say that leaves the debate about saving jobs versus saving lives still undecided. Well, not really. It really doesn't. Are we really going to have this debate? Saving lives versus saving jobs. Don't say it like that, because that's feeding into the Republican narrative. And I'm going to talk more about jobs here. There's an excellent article I'm going to get into here from Dina Winter over at The Reformer about jobs. And we're going to get into that in the next half hour here. But what you're really saying is this: the profit margins of the business owners is more important than human lives. And it wasn't, got a reminder, it wasn't just trying to reopen these businesses. It was these Republicans telling people, go out and get those beef and cheddars. Because their biggest concern wasn't their spiraling out of control death rates. The fact that their own citizens were dying, that they were serving them up to coronavirus left and right. But they were doing so to make sure that the business owners still had big profit margins, that killing off their own citizens and their workers and their communities, that was more important than saving lives. And my God, thank God Governor Walz was in charge of this state, because of the clown car states around us, including, worst of all, South Dakota, we actually had a state where our governor cared about his citizens, cared about the human life, cared about this, put forward, and I'll throw this back in your face every day of the week, Republicans, put forward a far more believable Christian standard than you ever came across in your damn lives. Ever. Governor Walz, from me, from everyone here at AM 950, and from the state of Minnesota, thank you for caring for the human beings and the lives. Because you know what? At the end of the day, this isn't really a debate. That is the most important thing. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Broadcasting live from the Rudy Luther Toyota Studios at AM 950 Radio. It is the Matt McNeil Show on your Friday, 952-946-6205. By the way, I think we got a good song. We're going to do some dance. I'm going to dance out to this weekend. Don't say what choice it is. You think it's a good choice there, Patrick? It will work?
I think it'll work out well.
It's a good one. All right. We got a good one for you. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I should mention can you imagine how badly? Let's go back a little more than a year when there was that note that came out that Bob Kroll put out, the union letter, where he said he implied that he and Paul Gazelka were trying to overthrow Governor Walz, and he was going to take control of the National Guard and, I guess, start cracking heads across the city of Minneapolis, and that Gazelka was going to try to get the Trump to basically somehow insert him as, I don't know what was going on there. Needless to say, there probably should be an investigation into that, because the Senate Majority Leader thinking that he should be able to override the governor is a really concerning thought process, and we should just make sure nothing like that actually did happen. But, you know, needless to say, can you imagine if something like that had happened and Paul Gazelka was in charge of this state during this pandemic? Holy God. Reminder that he, after the election, and his entire Republican caucus decided the most important thing in November, when the coronavirus was spiraling out of control, these clowns decided to go out to Lake Elmo and have a big old party where they basically, it sounds like, encourage no face masks, no social distancing, nothing like that. In turn, they sickened a whole bunch of the Republican Senate caucus, likely killed one of their own senators, and then did not tell the DFL Senate caucus, oh, by the way, even though we're going to meet in close quarters here in the Senate, we've got a major outbreak of coronavirus. It wasn't until it actually, you know, people were, you know, that people were noticing, wow, all these senators are sick, they finally came clean and, oh, I guess we should have mentioned that. Can you imagine what an irresponsible jackass like Paul Gazelka would have been like if he was making the decisions in the state? We would have one of the worst death rates in the country. And he'd sit there saying, but you could get your beef and cheddars at Arby's. Beef and cheddars at Arby's. Grandma's dead, but you can celebrate after her funeral with a beef and cheddar at Arby's. Because the only thing that matters to them are those, the business owners' profit margins, not the human beings. And they're all fake Christians. Can anyone of these Republicans, any Republican, after this, claim to be pro-life? Seriously, can they? Because your arguments are kind of, you know, it's interesting as you say that, you know, keep out of my life with your medical nose when it comes to vaccines. You don't seem to mind that with women's uteruses. I'm just going to make the point. I think you guys got to figure out what your policy is, because right now you guys clearly weren't, the last year, this was a test and you guys failed spectacularly. You guys are not pro-life. That's no way. The greatest generation didn't deserve to be treated like that. Not any way, shape, or form. 952-946-6205. We have, part of this whole discussion, though, has been the discussion about jobs. Because one of the things that's happened is you've had some Republican states, and including here in Minnesota, there have been calls to get rid of the $300 extra unemployment benefits because that was deterring people from going back to work. Well, people did not want to go back to the same jobs that they were at before. And the Republicans immediately equated it, well, it was the $300, and so some states got rid of it. And as a matter of fact, some states, I think it's Maryland, Ohio, and Indiana, are currently being sued by their own citizens saying they denied them the extra benefits, and they're probably going to lose. They're going to have to pay that money. But they got rid of this money, and their argument was, well, once we stop giving them the extra money so they can live high on the hog and eat their bonbons, they'll go back to their jobs. Well, no, they didn't. And so people have been starting to look into more about why exactly after the pandemic, people have kind of had it with certain jobs. And like everything, it's a multi-layered thing. But like Republicans always do, they try to take something that's multi-layered and turn it into bleh. And they just do a bumper sticker thing and they try to make it work. And it shockingly does. But the reality is it wasn't the extra unemployment benefits. It was the fact that the service industry sucks. It does. It seems to suck and suck huge. Now, not completely, and I want to be careful. I do not want to paint with a wide brush on this because there's a lot of service jobs out there that people really like, and there's a lot of employers that treat their employees really, really well. But there's a lot that don't. And you got to look through this. Dina Winter has an exceptional article on Minnesota Reformer. I'll post it a little bit later on where she kind of talks to some people about this. Sophia Bishop, 20, left the food service industry a few weeks ago to go work in healthcare. After doing some time restaurant work in college, she was at a Burnsville restaurant for about a year and a half. For me, basically, it was a complete chaos. Mother's Day 2020 was a disaster, she said, when they got some 400 orders in a few hours, and she was one of the few people trained to do takeout orders, so it was just she and the managers and the cooks. The lobby was full of maskless people screaming at us. Bishop said it was hellish. Now, I want to stop. People, the Republicans don't want you thinking about that. Yeah, and this, by the way, the maskless part, that's Republicans. That was the ones that are out there screaming, like, yeah, how to wear a mask, that's your freedom. No, it's mild inconvenience in a private business. But these people were feel emboldened and would go scream at people in these restaurants over these little things. And by the way, I have actually been in a few restaurants. Yeah, the tone of the customers has changed. When we started, when people started, of course, we shut down everything. When people started doing to-go orders and picking up stuff, and you go to restaurants, people are like, thank you, thank you, thank you. Now it's like, give me my food. Where's my beef and cheddar? That's all it is. And I'm going to take a guess most of those people are Republicans. Just going to say. Bishop is hardly alone in leaving the service industry. Although hiring has picked up in recent weeks, workers interviewed by the Reformer say the pandemic has changed their perspective on their jobs, with some deciding to quit jobs, many of them they once loved. They say their eyes have been opened to the often extreme working conditions, including an expectation they work while they're sick, and few benefits and uneven pay. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics reported that in May 2020, the mean hourly wage for a restaurant cook was $15.40 per hour, while hosts made about $12. Minnesota, more than 150,000 people work in that industry. Bishop said that for the chain restaurant's host, one of the youngest, least experienced workers, work was particularly terrible during the pandemic. They were forced to try to convince people to wear masks or prevent 10 people from sitting at a table when it was barred by state regulations. We had a regular who just never wore a mask, and at some point you just can't argue anymore. We kind of felt like lambs to the slaughter. Bishop managed to avoid getting COVID-19, but most of her co-workers caught the virus. After the first lockdown, the restaurant was super short-staffed, and many workers took other jobs. Rather than continue to fight with grown adults to wear masks, the nursing major took a job as a nursing assistant at an assisted living center where she dispenses medication, changes diaper, and moves people around. She likes it better than working in the restaurant. I'm going to repeat that line because, yeah, you probably, if you want to know what it's like to work at some of these restaurants right now, here is a nurse, person, she took a work job in the healthcare sector because dispensing medication, changing diapers on adults, and moving people around is a better job than working at that restaurant. So that when Republicans and these business owners say, people are lazy and don't want to work, no, they'd rather go change a grown adult's diaper than work for you. That should tell you something about the job that you are offering these people. That's a kind of a stark line. I miss the restaurant a lot, but I think it's better for my soul, she said. I would agree with you at this point. If you're making that comment, I would agree. It probably is much better for your soul. I'm going to probably screw up this name. Amelie Prevost, A-M-E-L-I-E. Amelie, like many high school students, never anticipated she'd be searching for her first job during a pandemic. She found a job, began working part-time at a St. Paul eatery in August. Amelie said she wishes customers understood what it felt like to argue for their own protection. People would take their masks off to yell at us for things like long wait time, she said. Those days may be mercifully over, but while the restaurants and other businesses transition back to pre-pandemic practices, workers say some changes might be for the better. Prevost says she prefers wearing a mask at work and hopes she'll be able to continue wearing it despite the mandate being lifted. As for the industry as a whole, she echoed the sentiment of many of her peers who said the food and beverage industry culture is to work even if you're sick. I just hope that they take sick leave seriously and don't start cutting corners because the pandemic is over. I can tell you right now, I had a friend post on social media that they just quit a job. They called their manager. They said, I'm seriously sick. I don't know if I got coronavirus. I need to go get tested. And the manager came back and said, well, you get tested after you're done with your shift. Now, this is post-pandemic times. And she basically said, I quit. She just basically, I'm not going to jeopardize my coworkers. I'm not going to jeopardize you. And it was only, he basically, well, I quit. I'm turning my resignation. He hung up. Then he apparently called back and said, well, I guess you can take today off if you're feeling ill, but you need to be here tomorrow. And, you know, she said, no, I'm done. I mean, if this is where, if we're just going to go back to the times where people are just sick and you're just ordering them back into the restaurant, well, just to work because, and jeopardizing the customers, the rest of the staff. I mean, my goodness. After 4 years working at an office job in marketing, Dan Whelan decided to go back to a restaurant work in 2013. He was working as a line cook at two different restaurants. I like the energy of a restaurant, he said. When the pandemic hit last year, he was out of work that March, but in April, he's eager to get back to work. He was the only server to return to one of the restaurants, so it was just he, the owner, a line cook, and a prep cook, compared to 12 to 15 employees before the pandemic. As the pandemic ebbed and the restaurant was able to expand its hours, management struggled to keep people committed to commit to interviews. It's been very difficult to find staff, Whelan said. A lot of people chose not to come back to work. Not just because some were able to get unemployment benefits, but also because people struggled to get childcare. Younger, college-age people were just not interested, he said. One candidate who's landscaping chose landscaping because it was safer working outside. Another left the industry completely. When the other restaurant eliminated hourly positions and went to a flat wage for all employees, as COVID-19 spiked again last fall and returned to limited takeout, he left and now just works for the other restaurant. He found customers to be incredibly generous now that restaurants have reopened. People are just happy we were open. I got 2 points from that earlier there. We're going to take a break. I come back, got one more story. I believe it is one more story from this Dina Winter story. She actually has about 8 people she talked to. Excellent article. Like I said, I got to post that up a little bit later on. But I think that we need to, there's a lot of things that they're unpacking here. These servers are talking about it. It's working conditions. The customers are just absolute jerks in some of these institutions. And as well, there are two other things which I think have to be factored in. And we've been talking about this, but it's kind of a sign of the changing jobs market and economic situation. We'll get back to that in a second. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. This is the Matt McNeil Show. Back to Dina Winter's article from the Minnesota Reformer. At the onset of the pandemic, David DeMarc was able to transition smoothly from in-person to remote work as his primary workplace. The University of Minnesota, where he's a graduate student and instructor. The same wasn't true of his other job, working front and back of the house at a restaurant, which closed in March last year and reopened only last month. DeMarc said that he missed most about his job was the sense of community and the connection that he had with his coworkers. But the important parts of my job to me is probably the product, the fact that I was not relying on it for my primary income in the first place. David returned to his job after the restaurant reopened last month with a $5 wage increase he hopes will be permanent. And aside from that, he hasn't noticed much difference before the pandemic to now. Things really feel like they're close to pre-pandemic state of work. So I want to make sure I mention that one because there are a lot of places where people are going back. There, I think one of the things, I want to make sure I'm careful of saying how I say this. It seems like the people I know who work for large national chain restaurants, their experience was much worse. And one of the things that's really kind of scaring me is to find out over the last year how many of their employees died because of coronavirus, and like line cooks and stuff like that, and they just almost kept quiet. There's a lot of reasons why people seem to have moved away from service industry jobs. Obviously, the customer service, I mean, if your customer is screaming at people, then you can't expect people, why don't you have more people working here? Well, why are you talking to them like that? The reports of managers not telling staff when people are sick and seriously sick and have coronavirus, I wouldn't trust those people again. But there's two things that are outside of the purview of that business, which I think are having much larger impacts than people want to admit. One is the daycare issue. The cost of daycare is astounding right now. And if I'm going to have to work 3 jobs just to have someone watch my kid, well, what's the point? What's the point? What's the point of me going out there and working, 12 hours a day just to have someone else raise my kid? I'll just stay home and kind of break even. And if you don't want to address that problem, then don't complain about the staff, because that is a kitchen table, real world problem for a lot of parents. The other one, and this is one that I've really been amazed by, the healthcare industry, specifically nursing homes, assisted livings, and facilities that offer jobs which are not necessarily kind of trained, skilled jobs, in the sense being that you need to get a college degree or a technical college degree to get, a nursing school degree. but offer jobs for, like, you know, people are cleaning up rooms, helping out, making food in the cafeterias or whatever the case may be. The healthcare industry, they kind of seem to realize, hey, we could kind of pick a lot of these people clean from these other businesses, get them to come work for us because we offer $3 or $4 more an hour because of the nature of it is. It's a much healthier work environment. That's one of the people I have known who have gone from the restaurant industry to the healthcare industry. The first thing they say is that we all wear masks, we all wear shields, we all have gloves, we're all safe. He said, never was that what. There's one person that told me it was never that way at their national chain restaurant. There was never a mask, there was never nothing. And here they get into this and they're getting paid more. It's clearly a safer work environment with coronavirus. And as one Ryan mentioning here on the stream here, as we're watching, he's watching the show. It's on Facebook. You can go to Facebook and watch on AM 950 Radio and Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil show. He says, "Yeah, their people are more grateful. Yes, you are doing things such as changing adult people's diapers and distributing food and stuff like this. But the people are far more grateful for your business than some person who's screaming, 'Where's my Cheddar Bay biscuits? Damn it!' You know, that's." Where would you rather work? I get paid more, it's a safer work environment, and these people appreciate what I do, or I could go work for some national restaurant. Republicans, it's not about the $300. It's about the fact that you've enabled a system which takes advantage of the American worker, and the American worker is just done taking your crap. So good luck with that, just FYI. Coming up next hour, Nathan Chamolo is going to join us, the vaccine equator for the director of the state. He'll be joining Brett and me next hour right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, broadcasting live from the Rudy Luther Toyota studios at AM 950 Radio. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Brett Johnson, you have not been in studio with me for almost 2 weeks now. As a matter of fact, 2 weeks today, I think it is.
I think at least 2 weeks, if not longer.
Well, it was longer, actually. Yeah, maybe it's almost 3 weeks. Do I stink? Is I smelling? Do I have an issue? I'm a clown?
That's part of the issue, only a small part.
The smell of love, that's what that is. we got a great interview coming up here, but I wanted to actually bring up something that we talked about before because this is one of those things that, you see this and you're like, oh, for goodness sakes. It has to do with people who are, I'll say it, self-pleasuring. And no, I'm not talking about the Republicans bragging about mansion and cinema basically going along with making sure the filibuster sticks around. It's that disturbing story about Louis C.K. And he has a slate of upcoming shows. They sold out within minutes of the shows being announced. He's at Acme. It's 5 shows, and like I said, they sold out real quick. I mean, real quick. And I guess we talked about this before because what do you do with someone like this? I mean, to my knowledge, he didn't go to jail or anything. I mean, he might have been sued civil court, but I don't believe they pressed charges. No one pressed charges. Criminal charges against him, correct? Do you know of anything like that?
I don't think they did either, correct.
So, because if you go to jail, then, the state's got you, you're locked behind bars, and you get your 3 meals and you're in a bunk, and that's where you stay. That's one thing. But, and he clearly admitted, I mean, he's wrong here. He did expose himself inappropriately to female comedians and other performers at these clubs. And he was wrong, and he admitted to it. He keeps trying to make a comeback. Now, I got a reminder, before this all happened, he was one of the bigger names. I mean, he was one of the bigger names in comedy. And it's a case where the question comes in. We had, and like I said, I kind of want to get out of the way of this to a point. I want to mention this because it is kind of a break. It gets a lot of attention, especially on social media. A lot of women just don't want him to be able to tour anymore. Don't want him to be able to go out in the clubs. And the problem that you when you do that is that what do you then do with him? We also talked about this before when he first came on tour and he did sell out those shows. There are people who, if he went and worked for an Arby's, and I've been bringing up Arby's a lot today, but if he did get a job at an Arby's, people would be at the Arby's saying, why are you hiring that guy? That guy's a piece of human trash. And he is a piece of human trash. And so then you get rid of him. So it becomes a question is, do we allow someone like this to be part of society. Do you understand what I'm saying? Is that his career choice, whether you agree with that or not, is to do comedy. Clubs are willing to bring him in. He sells them out fairly quickly. Should that just not even be an option? And if it's not, what then is the option on the table? Do we allow him to get another job somewhere else? Because I could make the argument, well, if he's not safe to do this, is he safe to do that? But then we say, well, we just give him a stipend and he goes and hopefully lives in a house and he basically doesn't bother anyone anymore. I don't quite know what to do with that. But a lot of people are really bothered by the fact that here he is once again back in town and his show is sold out very quickly. I can understand that, but what do we do with something, a person like that is not in jail, is not in a prison? I don't know what you do. Cosby's talking about possibly going out and doing shows. Did you see that?
Yeah, that's a little different, I think, than the Louis C.K. situation, sending Cosby back on tour. But yeah, with Louis C.K., I mean, that is the question. What do you do? All right, so we've got him pulled from tours, or at least before they had him pulled from tours, obviously. How long do you do that? The guy, has he learned his lesson? Does he seem like he's come away as a better person? I mean, I would think in that case, if he actually has come back as a better person, why not let him back out there?
It's interesting when you compare it to two other people that have had similar problems. Mel Gibson and his anti-Semitic rants, although people seem to be forgiving – well, some people seem to be forgiving him, and he is doing some movies. I'm seeing him show up on some movies that are on Netflix and some of these streaming services. But then you got Kevin Spacey, and obviously a very different situation, abuse there. And he keeps saying, I'm going to make a comeback, I'm going to make a comeback. It seems like he's being relegated more and more to kind of European movie markets as opposed to anything in the United States. And it doesn't seem like there's really any path for him to come back at this point. I don't know. I mean, it seems that in the wake of the rise of the Me Too movement, I don't think Louis C.K. is ever going to be mainstream ever again. I don't think he's ever going to have a TV show. I don't think he's going to have a movie contract. And I don't think he's necessarily going to be able to sustain himself. Well, maybe he can sustain himself by doing the tours, and maybe this is the only option he has. But the idea is, what do we do? Do we allow someone to do that, and we just kind of shrug our shoulders saying, I'm never going to go to a show, or and go from there? Or do you basically say, no, you can't do that, but then if you say you can't do this, then why could he work at a restaurant or a florist in a bar or anything? Because isn't the same argument is if he's not safe enough to work in this venue, where do you have him work? So I don't know. It's a complicated one, man.
It is, yeah. And it goes to a larger question of, yeah, what do you do with people that do controversial actions or do something like Louis C.K. did? Yeah, you just punish them for the rest of their life and say you're no longer allowed to function in society, even if they maybe are showing remorse for what they've done. I think that's a big part of it right there. I mean, you certainly have people who have done dumb things that don't have any remorse for their actions. You know,
Kevin Spacey, Bill Cosby seem to be both in there.
Exactly.
Going the other side, and I want to leave Louis C.K. out of this completely. We've had this, and we've talked to Brianna Bierschbach, who has covered the Minnesota Sex Offender Program. You have people who have been locked up, who have served their term, who have been what they consider to be model prisoners, who have done everything right, have not gotten one step out of line, and the state refuses to release them. So, I mean, and I said, you know, you can't, and one of the things we've talked about with Brianna is that you can't come back and revisit a sentence where you turn a 10-year sentence into a life sentence just because you just don't want to be the person that releases the person. I think you have to get a little more, we have to do more thought process on this whole thing, because from both sides of it, there seems to be some issues. And whether it's people that have committed a crime but served their time, have been what you consider model prisoners, and then what do you do with them? Do you release them at all? Which right now we're not, which is we are going to lose that lawsuit. As Brianna said, we're going to eventually lose that lawsuit and lose it badly. So what do we do there? But on the other side of it, you have people who, I think the argument you can make is with Louis C.K., is he really remorseful because he's back on tour? Does he really, how much remorse does the guy have for his actions if he's still going out and doing what was the vehicle of those actions in the first place?
Yeah, it's tough to answer with those questions. What do you do with him?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I don't know if, you know, I can tell you right now, I don't like I can tell a lot of people would push back on some sort of, okay, we're just going to put you on, you can stay at your home, we'll give you a stipend, just leave the rest of society alone. People are not going to go for that, I don't think. Republican would, I can tell you right now.
At the end of the day, what does that accomplish too?
Mm-hmm, exactly. Now, I did, in the first hour, talk a lot about coronavirus, Governor Walz is what we can, you know, the Care 11 story where he breaks down the fact that the Governor Walz clearly did a better job in Minnesota with saving human lives here. We are going to talk a little bit more here about vaccines and stuff like that. You've got, who's your guest coming in here?
Dr. Nathan Cohelo. He's the equity director for the vaccine program in Minnesota. So we're talking about how they're trying to reach underserved communities, whether it's in Minneapolis or even rural areas, since obviously, that's a very pertinent topic, being that the Delta variant is running wild in rural areas.
And they people like to talk about this. When they talk about underserved areas, they only talk about the cities. The reality is in rural Minnesota, there is there's a lot of swaths out there because the rural hospitals closed 10, 15, 20 years ago where you just don't have options. And so that, I'm fascinated. This is going to be great. So this is Dr. Nathan Cohelo.
Yep. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here. As I want to talk about vaccines, because that is still something that is very important here in the country, especially as we battle the Delta variant, which is probably going to be emerging as the dominant variant within the next few weeks and months here in the country. So joining us to talk about vaccination efforts and making sure we reach all communities with vaccines is Dr. Nathan Cohelo. He is a Minneapolis pediatrician and state vaccine equity director as he joins us now on the show. Dr. Cohelo, thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
So the first thing I got to ask you about is that, well, we know this Delta variant is making its way into the United States. Well, it's already made its way into the United States and Minnesota. And can you talk about how the vaccines work against this variant and if we should maybe have any concerns for people who are already vaccinated?
So we're still learning about how vaccines work against these variants as they emerge. So the early evidence that we have thus far is that our mRNA vaccines, so Pfizer and Moderna, have less effectiveness after just one dose, but are very effective in protecting folks from the Delta variant or any other variants after two doses, and protecting folks from things like hospitalization and death in particular. And so, and we're still learning and waiting on some more information on Johnson & Johnson. That vaccine has not been as widely used globally, and so there's just not as much information out there on its effectiveness against the variant at this point. But we know that overall the effectiveness for J&J has been quite good against other variants.
Yeah, and really the vaccines have been working extremely effective, it seems, against all the variants. As I think I saw the recent report, is that of all the deaths that have been reported over the past few days, only 0.8% of them were from people who were vaccinated, which means, yeah, pretty much people who are hospitalized or who have unfortunately been dying have been the unvaccinated. And certainly we don't want to see that, but I think that's more proof to show how effective these vaccines have been against COVID, no matter the variant.
Yeah, exactly. The CDC issued a report looking at vaccinations and what we call breakthrough cases. And so those are folks who are fully vaccinated, so 2 weeks after receiving a vaccination, who still get COVID-19. And looking through the end of April, at that point, 101 million Americans had been fully vaccinated, and they saw only 10,000 reported cases of COVID-19. And out of those, only 120 who actually passed away from COVID-19 after being fully vaccinated. So, you know, your risk of that is basically one in about 20 million almost. And so this just shows you how highly effective these vaccines are. We know nothing is 100%, and so we expect to see some breakthrough rates of cases. But if you would have told us this a year ago that we'd see this level of effectiveness, I don't think people would have believed it, how effective these vaccines are. So it really is just a wonderful way to help get out of this pandemic.
Unfortunately, here in Minnesota, and I think this is true in other areas of the country, we've seen people who are people of color, whether Black, Latino, or Asians, people receiving vaccines at rates that trailed their percentage of the statewide population. Have we seen any recent improvement in terms of making sure we get vaccines and give access to people of color to vaccines? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so there's definitely been improvement in both access for vaccines and access for information. You know, unfortunately, with how some of the eligibility was structured for vaccinations early on, we saw you know, gaps emerge that have been slow to catch up. And then on top of that, you add just our historical gaps in access to information and healthcare that lead to many of the disparities in healthcare outcomes we see due to things like structural racism and inequity. But, you know, the encouraging news is that we've seen those gaps decrease over the last couple months here. We've had several, you know, 4 or more weeks now of gains where our Black and Hispanic communities in particular have had higher vaccination rates. And so while those gaps persist, they are starting to dwindle. You know, a lot of access from many different ways, whether it's pharmacies, whether it's community centers, churches, now more and more actual physicians' offices are being able to carry the vaccine as well. And so that's allowing some of these conversations to help folks' concerns get addressed. And that's, you know, a lot of the work that I've been doing here at the Department of Health has been around how do we decrease those barriers, whether it's getting those community clinics off the ground, helping get mobile vaccination units into places that are hardly reached, working with our managed care organizations who cover our Medicaid enrollees to get them information, a system of transportation to vaccine opportunities. And so there's just been a tremendous amount of efforts to really help decrease these gaps, but we still have lots of work to do.
And of course, you are the state vaccine equity director, and I want to talk about how we can break through some of these barriers, because I think rightfully a lot of people of color, whether Black or Latinx, are skeptical of the government, and they have many reasons to be skeptical of the government due to structural racism and, of course, the history of our country. So talk about some of the work you're doing to try to break through some of these barriers in terms of vaccine hesitancy.
Yeah, and I would say a lot of the gaps, you know, appeared initially due more towards access, because if you look at, you know, national surveys of interest in getting vaccinated, the interest, there was no difference between Black and white and Hispanic and Asian, no significant difference in those adults who are willing to get vaccinated. And so I think a lot of it has been kind of a structural and access. But there does, now that we're getting more and more folks, you know, access and folks who are ready to get the vaccine have the opportunity to do so, we are running into folks who are facing vaccine deliberation. And so some of those things are, as you note, related to, you know, our history of structural racism in medicine and how medicine and the government had times has violated the trust of our communities. And so really, you know, it's just going to require us continuing to show up in places. And so whether it's having vaccine fairs like we did with the assistance of Attorney General Ellison's office a couple of weeks ago in North Minneapolis, again, using mobile vaccine units to show up consistently to places and offer folks walk-up appointments, doing town halls where folks are able to ask questions from providers that look like them from their community and get the answers they need about to make the safe and right decision, getting information from their managed care organizations that are, you know, calling and seeing what concerns they have and then, you know, connecting them to information and reliable resources. There's a number of ways. And then recently we had the Community Ambassadors Program. So we hope to see more and more uptake of ambassadors and folks in the community stepping forward to kind of help carry those messages. And we're also participating in the Shot at the Shop initiative through the Biden administration, which is partnering with Black-owned barbershops and salons to provide them resources and funding to get education around the shot so that they can have conversations with folks in community. And then the Department of Health here in Minnesota is working with shops that are interested in having actual vaccination opportunities or clinics within their barbershop in coordination with other contractors like Black Nurses Rock to, again, provide folks both the information and access to shots as much as possible.
Rural areas in Minnesota have also been lagging behind the metro area when it comes to administering vaccinations. Do rural areas have higher vaccine hesitancy, or is this an access issue? Because as I look at the map of counties in Minnesota where we have high vaccination rates and low vaccination rates. As I said, obviously the metro area certainly has high vaccination rates. But even when I look at some of the rural counties, like take Olmsted County, for instance, that's the home to Rochester, they have 78% of their residents age 16 and older that have received at least one vaccine dose. So talk a little bit about some of the gaps we're seeing between rural and metro Minnesota in terms of administering vaccine. Is this an issue of hesitancy, or does this kind of come down to access, or maybe even a little bit of both?
Yeah, like all things, I think it is a mixed and somewhat complex picture, and so it's a little bit of both. We certainly know that there are issues with hesitancy or deliberation, again, as I like to call it, around COVID-19 vaccination in particular, and so that's whether or not that folks, trust the government and are willing to get the shot. There's a lot of folks who still aren't convinced that COVID-19 is as serious as an issue as we certainly know it isn't in the healthcare sphere. And so, having to work on getting them education around the actual threat to their health and their community and how vaccination helps protect against that. I think there remains access issues. And so there's this tool that was put forward by some of the Harvard-affiliated institutions out in Boston that looked at vaccine access in, vaccine deserts based off of vaccine clinics and pharmacies in the CDC's COVID-19 vaccine tracker. And if you look at Minnesota on that, the metro areas like Rochester, Duluth, there's really not any spots that would be considered a vaccine desert, which is, more than 15 minutes to drive to get a vaccination. But in many parts of greater Minnesota, they would qualify as a vaccine desert, having to travel more than 15 minutes. And then if you just think about some of, the jobs that folks have, where you're working kind of all day and you kind of go home and just have time to, get your meal, get maybe spend a little bit of time with your family, go to sleep and then do it again. Just the time that most of the vaccination opportunities are can be a barrier, even if you have, somewhat of an interest or wouldn't be opposed to getting it, but you're not going to necessarily go out of your way to get it. And so that's where things like mobile vaccination units continue to work with our local public health partners on ways to really bring vaccines, whether it's to employers, to other spots where folks are already going, is going to be crucial throughout the summer and into the fall.
Yeah, that's an interesting take, because we've seen many states, even including Minnesota, try incentive programs to get vaccinations with mixed results, where early on in Ohio, when they had their vaccine lottery, they did see a little bit of a spike in terms of people getting vaccinated, but now that's leveled off, and still Ohio is unfortunately not above 50%. Minnesota has also tried the same thing. So what do you make of incentive programs? Is that enough, or do we still need to make sure people are getting access to vaccinations as well?
Yeah, it's unfortunately there's no magic bullet here to the issue of trying to get our vaccination rates up, and folks who have done vaccination campaigns prior to COVID-19 were well aware of this. When you look at some of this, the behavioral science literature around what motivates folks to do public health interventions, some are incentivized by small gifts or kind of the chance at larger gifts like a lottery, but there's still a number that aren't, and really particularly if they still have to go out of their own way to find a vaccination, and so again, just bringing it to the both information about it and the access to it, so that once folks get the information they need, feel ready, that then there isn't this additional barrier of, well, how do I get it? Like, it's quite clear. And so that's the work ahead of us, is that incentives will bring some people under the door, and I think every person that gets the shot is a valuable effort. And so I think we'll continue to explore other ways to potentially use incentives, but it's just one of many tools that we need to use to get to our goals.
And final question I have for you, Dr. Chimolo. I'm curious as to how you personally talk to someone who is hesitant about getting the vaccine. And I'm not talking about people who are openly hostile, the people who are saying Bill Gates is putting a microchip in the vaccine. I'm talking about people who are just hesitant about the vaccine, where they're unsure about whether they want to get it or not. At least in your case, how do you personally talk to someone who is hesitant about receiving the vaccine?
Yeah, and this is a conversation that I have, you know, as a pediatrician that I've had, you know, weekly in my practice ever since starting. And so really it starts with understanding what their concerns are. You know, have they heard anything in particular that has them concerned? Or maybe they're just looking for just general information. And so really starting the conversation with understanding what their questions or concerns are. And when you do that, you can find that maybe there's just some misunderstanding about the cost. And, you know, for COVID-19 vaccinations, it's free to get vaccinated. And so there's no cost there. Some folks are, you know, interested in, you know, what is the benefit, you know, how these vaccines were made, you know, how they came along as quickly as they did, and kind of understanding how they've gone through the same rigorous science and protocol as other vaccines, but there's things like money and investment in the number of people working on it that really helped move it along at a rate that we hadn't seen before. Thinking about things like what are the side effects and, you know, how would you prepare for that? And kind of, you know, even talking to parents about how these are side effects that we're all very familiar with when our kids get their routine immunizations. There's no unusual side effects that we've seen for the most part with vaccination to COVID-19. So how do we anticipate for that? How do we plan for that? And telling folks what we do know about, you know, rare events and things like that. And so and then kind of continuing to build the conversation from there and just really inviting folks in. And, you know, I think sometimes we get into trouble to kind of launching into assuming what folks are hesitant about. Really, if we start by listening, we can probably kind of get to filling the knowledge gaps and giving them all the information they need to make the best plan to keep themselves safe and our community safe.
We've been speaking with Dr. Nathan Chomolo, who is a Minneapolis pediatrician and also the state vaccine equity director, about vaccine access and vaccine hesitancy here in Minnesota and how we can get those vaccination numbers up so we can eventually reach that goal of reaching 70 or even 80%. And of course, make sure you get vaccinated if you have not already received one. Dr. Chomolo, thanks so much for joining me on the show today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks again for having me. Have a great afternoon.
We'll take a break and turn things back over to Matt McNeil up next.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. And thank you once again to Dr. Nathan Chomolo, who joined us, the Minnesota Vaccine Equity Director there. As Republicans do everything in their power to get people shot trying to come to their front door, and I'm dead serious. I'm very concerned right now that someone's going to end up getting shot. And it might not even be one of these people. It just could be like a pizza delivery guy who's like, I was told to be scared of other humans, and that sort of thing. I don't know what's going on. The reality is we need people out in these rural communities that are not basically trying to drive a narrative to keep this country torn apart and are trying to save the people out there as opposed to hurt them. And, you know, when you get to a point where Republican voters can have Republicans give them advice that actually gets family members killed, and they say, I still love the cut of their jib, I just don't get it. I do not get it. So going back to the topic from last hour, we were talking about jobs. Patrick, you know, you kind of yourself recently had worked in the fast food industry. And, you know, your experience kind of, when we were talking about those people's experiences working in restaurants, you kind of were nodding along. Is that, you know, it just is, you are not anything more than just a staple, a paperclip, a pencil for a lot of these businesses, especially these national chain restaurants. There's not a lot of compassion for the employees, is there?
Absolutely not. And, I know I told this story on air recently, but I used to work at a fast food restaurant, as you were saying, and management doesn't really like you. They view you as a money pit. You don't put anything back in for them, but you take their money away. Customers obviously don't really care for you. You're just kind of this object that, get me my food, don't mess it up, you know, thankless job. And, I know you were saying that's largely a national, you know, across the board if it's a national restaurant, but you know there are lots of crummy local people to work for as well. Not to disparage any
be careful, we want to be careful, but you're right. But you want to hear the thing which is really interesting is you tell me about that. I worked in fast food as a kid, And first of all, it wasn't nearly the, you know, I think when the coffee shops came around, those jobs became, especially for young high school kids, became a lot less desirable. But when I was a kid, it's like, oh, you got a job at McDonald's. I worked at McDonald's and they liked it. The managers were pretty nice to us. I mean, we're kind of going out of the way for the employees. And when I was, and one summer when I went out and I worked openings at one of their restaurants out in the West Metro, that was away from, I worked at the Knollwood Mall McDonald's, but they had me go on, I think it was to the Chanhassen when I was working out there. And I was, you know, I'd go out there and help open in the morning. One of the things that was really, they were very thankful and we appreciate you coming out. They were very this. That just doesn't seem to exist anymore. I mean, it's the way that these things, I mean, to get every dime out of these businesses they can, part of the inertia of that process is to treat employees worse and worse and worse. And frankly, I mean, I would be making probably today $20 to $22 an hour if I just kept up with inflation for what I was getting paid in the 1980s at that restaurant. And no one gets paid close to that anymore.
No, not at all. And if you end up, I'll just add on a little bit. It wasn't so much the managers who worked in the store. It was the regional managers and district managers who weren't there on a daily basis. They were the ones who would come in and be like, you guys are all just garbage to us.
Well, that's nice. Thank you. And you're wondering why people don't want to work here. Wow. Let's take a break. Let's get caught back up. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I'm actually a little concerned about this weekend. I'll get to that in a second. There's a few different rallies going on around the country that I'm a little concerned about. We'll get to that. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. I am a little concerned about, and this is just something that kind of developing, I'm kind of paying attention to today. Apparently, there's going to be a CPAC convention, and there's concerns that these people that want to forcibly install Trump as the president might actually, it seems like part of what's going on right now is that unless you are of that mindset that Trump was robbed and Trump needs to be installed as president of the United States, that you're basically a traitor to the Republican Party. This on the heels of a story, economist J. Elliot Morris pointed to polls that showing a plurality of Republican voters think the state legislators should have the right to overturn the results of a presidential election. Think about that for a second. That if your citizens say, you know, okay, Joe Biden won, that no, the state legislature can come back in and say, you know what, he didn't win. Wow, that's some stuff right there. And basically, this comes down to so they can't lose. That if the voters say, oh, that Donald Trump won, then oh well, the voters are always right. But if the voters come back and say Joe Biden won, oh well, the voters were wrong. The legislature, it's fixing the system, and this is getting pretty obscene. Don't get me wrong, the Republicans have fixed the playing field. There's a pretty big tilt, but this is basically putting it on its side. While supermajorities believe that former President Trump really won the 2020 election and Joe Biden is illegitimate, and as a matter of fact, Morris said the most recent polling numbers show that 74% of Republican voters do not believe Biden's presidency is legit. 74%. And mind you, if something god awful does try to happen and people try to overthrow the government, you know, Republicans will and they've done this through their news media. The news media, the OANs, the Fox News, the Newsmax, that's what's pushed this narrative that there is an illegitimate president, which there is not. Joe Biden won fair and square. Outside of his beatdown of President Obama's beatdown of John McCain, it's the biggest margin of victory in the last 20 years or so in a presidential election. So, no, Joe Biden won, and he won fair and square. But, you see, here's the funny thing, is that if there's an attempt at overthrowing the government, if it succeeds, they could say, well, see, a lot of our people think it's illegitimate. Now, I highly doubt it would succeed, which then gives them the ability to say, you know, no one here thought this was illegitimate. They, once again, ask for forgiveness, don't ask for permission. This is kind of where they're at. So I'm a little concerned about a few things in regards to this. There's a rally that's going to be in Michigan somewhere that the Proud Boys are going to show up at. They're going to show up at that CPAC conference in Texas. And, of course, they're getting ready to remove that. Remember the the problems they had in Charlottesville. There, it sounds like they're getting ready to actually remove that Robert E. Lee statue. You should burn it down and get rid of it. They're going to get rid of that. I'm going to imagine that's going to be a flashpoint to a point. But here's interesting. This is the guy from, I think it's from Forbes, Andrew Solander. This is a card that's being distributed at the CPAC conference in Texas. Seven-point plan to restore Donald Trump in days, not years. In days. Reveal Achilles' heel. Pull back the curtain on the horror show that's today's Democrat Party. Watch Pelosi melt like the Wicked Witch of the West. See the Black Caucus and other key groups flip unexpectedly and watch the tables turn. I'm going to guess he's saying that Pelosi has to resign, although I'm not quite sure how he proposes that in the first. That's number one. Number two, witness a trusted conservative elected as Speaker of the House with the Congressional Black Caucus? Yeah, that's going to happen. All right. Witness a trusted conservative elected as Speaker of the House and finally reveal suppressed results of existing investigations into election racketeering. No, that doesn't exist. But wow, that's a fantasy right there. Correct the official record. Reveal that Trump legitimately won the 2020 election. That's number three. He didn't. The Speaker of the House drafts articles of impeachment for Biden and Harris. Citizen Donald Trump is placed in the line of presidential succession behind the vice president by electing him Speaker of the House. Now, actually, they could do that because a Speaker of the House does not have to be an elected official. Anyone can become Speaker of the House. And as a matter of fact, Republicans have actually floated the idea that if they become the majority in the House, that they'll actually install Trump as the president, or as the Speaker of the House, to put him in the line of succession. Speaker of the House Donald Trump then calls for a vote to impeach, charge, remove imposters Biden and Harris. Duly impeach, charge, remove Biden and Harris, and put them into power. So that's what they want to do, and they want to do this in a matter of days. I don't think that's going to happen. But I do think this, right now, this is coming to a point. All this is coming to a point. And I would make an argument, whether they said, Lindell has made the official date, let me pull up my calendar here, of August 13th, it's a Friday. August 13th is going to be the day that Trump is being installed. What happens when we get to these dates and the further we get down the road and he clearly hasn't been installed? What's going to happen? Because there's a lot of people out there right now that are waving guns around talking about, we got to stop these people. They're going to steal your Bibles. They're going to inject you with vaccine. And they're riling these people up. And they are. There is a definitive attempt to get these Republicans frothing at the mouth, ready to fight again. Again. I'm getting a little concerned here. I am, just because there's going to be a lot of people who are going to get shot in this country if these clowns start it. I would tell you this. I'll take the 10th Mountain Corps. Let's bring in the military against these people, because it will be hilarious watching the Proud Boys run for their lives as the Army Rangers move in. Oh, can't wait. Delicious. But, you know, hey, if you guys think you can take on the Navy SEALs, yeah, good luck. Good luck with that. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Just keep an eye on things. Next few weeks are going to be very interesting in the fragile mentality of the Republican Party. Protests in Uptown neighborhood in the wake of the Winston Smith death may have many residents and business owners on edge. City leaders are working to gain control of the neighborhood, but say they don't have enough manpower. From hot rodders doing spin-outs to gunshots, chaotic scenes have become all too common in the Uptown neighborhood in the after hours of recent protests. Now, once again, I'm going to bring up the question, if this is a consistent problem, and I understand you want to be careful, you don't want to incite people to be angry, but shouldn't there be police officers parked in the Uptown area, be somewhere maybe off the main streets, but there to respond in case, I don't know, someone starts doing donuts at the intersection of Lake and Hennepin? I don't quite understand where the police are at this point. This is not about peaceful protest. When you just take out a gun, you've gone well beyond peace, said Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey. 32 gunshots were fired from the driver of a vehicle late Wednesday night while they're doing donuts in the middle of the intersection there at Lagoon in Hennepin. raising major concerns about for those who live by, and you should, because I don't know if you're aware of this, that's a bullet that has been fired from that gun, and it's probably, we have plenty of people that get hurt and killed by absolute knuckleheads that fire off guns indiscriminately into the air. They absolutely do. There's concern of not knowing what's going on. There's no sense of control, said Uptown resident Bill Davis. City Council President Lisa Bender said that control is in the hands of Mayor Fry. The drag racing incident in Uptown is an unfortunate example of this problem, which has increased in the Twin Cities. Minneapolis Police Department is responding to these incidents and has been setting up road barriers on weekends as a deterrent. Specific questions about Minneapolis Police Department operations should be directed to the mayor's office, as the mayor has complete control over MPD per the city charter. I don't think he's doing a good job, just saying. When asked why these violent acts were being allowed to happen, Fry responded, "I condemn it in the strongest possible terms." He went on to say, "You've seen this massive attrition that we've seen from the department over the last year. We've lost as much as a third of police officers. It has an impact." Actually, no, the numbers were showing like you're down 60. You're down 60 people. That's what the staffing numbers were saying, at least. Carol Levin asked the mayor if there have been any discussions to recruit more police, which he responded, "A ton of discussions. You can't hire a cop off of Amazon. You've got to make sure they're trained, they're recruited, they're sworn in, and that's all. That all takes time. From the very beginning, I've talked about both an approach not defunding and getting rid of police, but making sure we can still instill accountability in everything that they're doing." Well, you're kind of failing spectacularly on that one, on the accountability. I'm just saying. "It's as frustrating as some of these acts may be, regardless of the motives behind them, for those who call the neighborhood home, they're sticking together in hopes of better days ahead. Everyone in my neighborhood, we're here because each other got each other's back," said Davis. The mayor said they're partnering with officers from neighboring departments, working with federal agencies like the FBI and ATF on investigations to curb some of the crime in the area. They're also talking with community activist groups to help de-escalate crime as the city works to recruit more police. Now, I will go back to the story that happened while I was on vacation, where we had some protesters kidnap a city council member and hold her against will. That you have a tendency there of losing a lot of support from the community. Earlier this week, I think on Tuesday, I brought up the fact that protesters, for some reason, had decided to let turn the dumpsters behind Stella's, where Smith had lunch before he was killed at the parking ramp across the street, decided to torch them, which has nothing to do. What happened to Smith has nothing to do with Stella's. He just had lunch there, for goodness sakes. Why you're attacking the restaurant, I don't know. And now you have this, where this is such a reckless Mad Max type of thing that, I mean, I guess I have no idea where the city's going with this. I mean, is Mayor Fry expecting a person with a carry and conceal weapon to stop this individual firing their gun in the middle of the intersection? Is that what you're saying? Because if you need law enforcement, Mayor, with all due respect, get off your ass and get them in there. And if you say to me, "Well, they don't want it because the people are angry." Well, they're angry because you've allowed the narrative of what happened to George Floyd to make it seem like the real victims here weren't George Floyd, but somehow the Minneapolis police. And that's on you and the city council for your lack of leadership in this entire damn thing, if I can be honest. But what are you expecting? I mean, it seems like at this point, that seems to be, I don't know where you're going with this. But I'm not on the side of people. I mean, this is not a protest. When someone's doing donuts in the middle of Hennepin and Lagoon, that's not a protest. That's just a thug. And if they're firing guns in the air, that person needs to be arrested for reckless endangerment. And that's a criminal. When you're kidnapping city council members or holding them against their will, when you're torching dumpsters at businesses that don't have anything to do with anything, and you shouldn't be torching dumpsters anyway, but when you're out there trying to make a protest and attacking a business that is not really, shouldn't be something which should be your focus, I'm not really on the side of these protesters anymore either. They just seem to be more kind of anarchist light at this point. But I sure as hell am not on the side of the police, because I don't care if you're down a third of the force. It's clear where they're having some problems. Why isn't there more police officers over there? And if it's a case where you need Hennepin County Sheriff or you need State Patrol or something like that, I don't know what you need to do, but you need to get someone down there. Because we're going to have people, we're going to have more and more people get hurt and get killed because everyone just seems to be shrugging their shoulders and no one seems to be wanting to lead here. And it's really unfortunately disappointing. It really is. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break, come back, wrap up the show for a week. It is the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. Oh, yeah, I'll do a little dancing here. I got one of the people commenting here on Sandra saying there's a rumor going around that people are hired harassing Uptown, so their property values go down, then corporations come in and buy the property, little or nothing. I actually have heard that rumor myself, that there are people that are putting that out there, that this is, there's something much more coordinated going on. And when you look at whether it's the pro-police community people who end up not being from the community and seem to be some sort of coordinated group that's out there to try to convince the city council and other people that the police don't need to be changed, versus as well the city getting in cahoots with organizations that they're not being honest about the relationship they have with these community groups who seem to be trying to push the city's agenda. I don't know. I can't say for sure. I will say this. What's going on right now is just a mess. And if anyone thinks there's leadership coming from anyone, whether that's currently the current protesters in Uptown, the police in Uptown, city council in Uptown, you guys are all just screwing this up and royally. And so find someone else, find someone who's an adult that can take care of this problem, because I can tell you there's something going on. And by the way, that comment was on the Facebook live stream over at AM 950 Radio on Facebook. It's kind of a tough week. It's kind of been one of those weeks, a little tightened up here, but of course, for a lot of people, a shortened week. We're going to get ready, going to get into the weekend here. We got Native Roots Radio. That's coming up next here. So make sure you stay with us right here on AM 950. To take us out today, Bob Seger, let's hit this here. Oh, rambling, gambling, man. Why not? Have a good weekend. We are back on a Monday. Till then, see ya.